Hi, and welcome to Kaleido Science. You are listening to our winter special, where we are taking a look at science communication. During December, we'll have special episodes on Sundays, where we talk to fellow science communicators about their medium and experience. In January, we'll go back to our schedule and we will take a look at the research behind science communication. This episode is hosted by Elisa Palme and Sophie Kühne. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode.
In this part of our Christmas special, we are talking to Dr. Helena Hartmann. She is a neuroscientist, psychologist, and science communicator and works at the Binge Lab at the University Hospital in Essen. Besides her research, she is doing a project which is called Science and Fiction, where researchers can share fictional stories about their general scientific results. And you may have heard her already before in one of our episodes, where we talked about the influence of empathy, placebo, and pain, or the connection of those three topics. And we will also link that episode in the show notes. And we are really excited to have you back on our podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be back.
Okay, as per usual, we're going to start with a little intro game. So this time it's only going to be three questions for the Christmas special. Just answer whatever comes to your mind spontaneously.
I'll try.
As a kid, I always wanted to be.
God, I had trouble with this question last time. I can't actually remember what I wanted to be as a kid, but as soon as I can remember, I wanted to be someone who has to do with English as a language and English books, because I liked reading a lot.
That's nice. Currently, I'm most fascinated by... This can also be non-scientific if you're currently very into like politics, history, or...
Well, this is a very random thing, but I'm currently having a new floor installed in an apartment that I recently bought together with my husband. And it's very fascinating to me how wooden floors are installed, because I'm watching the process and it's very... it's very, very interesting for somebody, because it has nothing to do with what I do.
What is the most fascinating part of it?
That there are little wooden parts and they get knocked into each other, because it's like a parquet, like a fish grade parquet. And then they get knocked and then it has to be sanded and oiled and there's so many steps.
That sounds quite interesting. Is it also like kept down by nails, or is it just kept down
by... No, it's
by
glue.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. If I was an emoji, I would be...
Well, it varies. At the moment, I would say the one with the star eyes, because I use it a lot on social media at the moment.
Nice. I don't think we've had that one before.
Okay, so thank you so much for your answers. And before we jump into your project, can you maybe tell us, which format of science do you consume the most outside of your own research? So besides maybe papers you read for research you're currently doing?
It's very difficult to say, because since I do so much science in my like 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, I actually, for example, I don't read nonfiction books so often, but I do engage with storytelling a lot and how science can be told in stories, because that has to do with my project. So I would probably say blogs or stories, but more creative writing. Does that make sense? It's a bit of a weird answer.
No, that's totally fine.
No, it actually makes sense. And it kind of ties into the next question. Can you tell us a little bit about how you do storytelling with science communication, or how storytelling fits into your way of science communication?
Yeah, well, I started out with science communication very early in my PhD in 2017, and I tried out a few different formats. And, you know, some work better than others. I realized I probably won't do a science slam, because I'm way too nervous to be on stage. But I did moderate one, which was really cool. I probably won't star in many YouTube videos, because I'm a bit embarrassed with like how, if I watch myself, you know, on video. But I like the written word a lot, and I read a lot myself, and I've gotten really into creative writing and reading. And my favorite genre is like fantasy, dystopian fiction, like completely or only marginally has something to do with the real world. And so I think that is kind of what got me interested. And also what I noticed when I tried out these different science communication formats is that every format has one thing in common, which is people trying to tell a story, people trying to transmit a certain story of whatever that is to the listeners, to the viewers, to the readers. And I got really curious about that.
Can you maybe tell us a bit more about the specific project or science and fiction, like what you're working on, so people who haven't heard of it also know what we're going to talk about for the next couple of minutes?
Yeah, so the project is called Science and Fiction, emphasis on the and, because everybody knows what science fiction is, and my project definitely includes science fiction, but not only. But I was trying to do a wordplay here on having science in the project, but also fiction. So it is basically a project where me or others use fictional short stories to communicate science, which means either a scientific paper, so a publication that they have published or somebody else has published, or a scientific topic in general, some famous effect, for example. And each contribution consists of some housekeeping stuff like a title, some content warnings, because we don't want people to read stories that they might feel triggered by, some keywords to better find stories. But then the heart of the contribution is the story itself, so a short story. And this has been increased a little bit in terms of the scope. So I, for example, also have videos. I also allow poems or songs, any way of creativity. I also even have some comics on the project, which is really cool. So there's many different ways to tell a story, right? The short story is kind of the most classic one, but then there's many other forms. But for the majority, people write short stories. So we have the short story, and then after the story, which kind of introduces either the topic in a broad way or talks about a specific result in a scientific study, then comes the citation. So which topic, study, reference the story refers to. And then you have a little paragraph, one or two, about the connection between the story and the research. And this is also really important, because sometimes if we just read a fictional story, it may be very hard to kind of take the step, which can sometimes be small, sometimes be big, towards the actual science that happened. Because people can be very creative in those stories, right? They go all out most of the time. And so then you have a paragraph explaining the connection, trying to explain what happened in the study in easy words and in a more lay language, and then connecting it to the topic of the story and what happened there. So for example, one of the first stories I wrote was about a girl who gets a pill from her friend, and the friend says, "That pill transformed my life. You will see see and feel in a completely different way." So she takes the pill, she goes outside, and she has really crazy experiences, which I won't spoiler. You can have a look. The story is called Emotion to Go. And obviously that's not what we did in the study that paper that the story is connected to. So the study was actually also people taking a pill. So kind of the topic was the same, but of course for a different reason. So this is kind of roughly what each contribution includes.
Is there any, I don't want to say rule, but any, do you tell people kind of any constraint of how close the story needs to be to their research? Or is it just, well, if you can make a connection afterwards, then it's fine?
I actually tried to leave very much creative freedom in that regard. So I didn't want to limit people, especially my guest writers. So of course I can pay attention that the story kind of, you know, makes sense in terms of the study it wants to explain, but other people are creative in their own ways. And I wanted to first, when I started the project, I first wanted to see what people submit and then kind of make up the rules as I go along. And that has worked out quite well so far. So I think people are very free in what they want to write. The most important thing is that this paragraph at the end connects it all and explains it all. So even if the story includes something that would never be done in a scientific study or in actual research, for example, because of ethical reasons or because it's completely futuristic, that has to be at least mentioned in this explanatory paragraph at the end.
I think that's really cool. When you first talked about it last time, I had some trouble imagining it, but then I checked out your website and I think it's such a cool way to make science like accessible to more people and explain science to more people. What would you say are some challenges that might be specific to your medium of science communication?
Yeah, so I created my own website for it and I have the stories there, but obviously it's still texts in a kind of longish format depending on how long the story is. So people have to spend time on the website. They have to click on the story, they have to read the full story and come all the way to the bottom where the kind of most important thing is, which is the science communication, right? And the story is meant to act as kind of an entryway or a gateway into the real science, right? So people get interested because they like reading and they like stories, but then they come to the real science. So that is, I think, tricky. And I've been playing around a bit with website analytics to try and find out how long people are on the website and, you know, which stories are read more than others. And that's been super interesting and informative, I would say. And I do see that people stay on the website for, let's say, 1 to 2 minutes, which is enough to read one story, I would say, because the stories are not so long. They're usually half a page to a page. Sometimes you have comics or only a video, so it's faster. And some are really short, just 1 or 2 paragraphs. And I think that's a good first step. But for me, also taking it to the next level is to think more about how I can, you know, engage people. Maybe, you know, I'm also on many social media sites, but different people are on different social media channels. So you have to think about who you want to reach. And I think that's one of the big challenges with any science communication. How do you reach the people that you want to reach, right? And in my case, I think I have a quite wide target group, which is just, you know, young adults, I would say adolescents and young adults who are interested in reading, up to older adults, of course. And those are pretty much everywhere. But I still think it's difficult to do this step from the science bubble, which is all my friends and colleagues and their friends, and then maybe my family and so on, to outside of that bubble. And I think, but that's a very general challenge for everyone doing science communication, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. Do you manage like all the stories and everything yourself? I assume you do some kind of like quality check before you upload a story. Do you do all of this by yourself?
Yes, at the moment, yes. So I started in 2023. Just writing stories myself. So I didn't have guest contributions from the beginning. So it was very easy. And I also wanted to commit to a regular upload, but not so frequently that I would stop at some point because I couldn't manage it on my own. So I decided for once a month, which is not very often, let's say, in social media, in the social media world, but it's okay for like a blog that comes out regularly. So I started with once a month and I had a few stories written already in my kind of storage space. So I wasn't getting stressed out in the beginning. I could just post and, you know, and after a few months I started, I thought it would be nice if other people could contribute stories just because I write in a certain way and in a certain genre and about mostly about my own research. And that's very limited, but I want this project to expand further to include many different research fields. So that's why I wanted other people to contribute as well. And the process is usually that I have a lot of explanation on my website, how you can contribute if you want to write. There's a bit of a, you know, intro that you can read. And then I have a Google form where people can just submit stories anytime. And I usually have like 4 weeks time to read the story and give feedback on it if it's something appropriate for the blog. And so I read every story. I usually am also the one translating the stories into the second language. So I publish bilingually in English and German. And so most of the stories are submitted in English. So then I translate them to German. But it's once a month. So usually I take one weekend, you know, and I have a lot of planning beforehand and throughout the year because I basically reserve slots for people. So if they're interested in writing, they usually contact me. And say, hey, can I write something? And then I reserve them a month. So I know a few months ahead who's going to publish when. that doesn't always work, because then life gets in the way. People say, oh, I can't make it, can we shift, and so on. So I always have some backup stories of my own in case a month is empty, basically. But that has worked out well and without too much stress so far. And the only other, let's say, more time-consuming thing that I do is the artwork. So I do the pictures on Canva. So I have templates for everything I just have to do for the single stories. And I create posts for Instagram, which is also, I would say, the most time consuming, because you have to do multiple different pages and then text on it and so on.
Captions and yeah. Because I think that's really cool, because I mean, we are 5 people, so we do this in a very different way, because we have 5 people who are involved and also have different like roles in the setting of a podcast. So
yeah, it can be, I guess it can be interesting to do it with more people. I guess because it was such a project that I kind of thought of myself in like my corner at some time around Christmas, I thought it would be cool to do something like that. I haven't felt the need to onboard more people to support with the work, but I don't know where the project is going, right? And I would be super happy if it expands and, you know, things are going in a bit more large scale direction to get more help.
Maybe in contrast to what is challenging, what do you like most about writing fictional science stories?
What I found really fascinating is that in the beginning, you might think that fictional stories and creative writing have nothing to do with science, or very little, because science is the real deal, like the research that is being done in the lab, right? But then on the other hand, there's many, many fictional stories and books on sciencey topics. And I always found it very cool. And I really wanted to try to connect these two things. So storytelling and creative stories with actual science. Because if you look at a scientific paper, I don't know, not even the scientists read the full paper at this point, because it's written in a very difficult, complex way, hard to understand, very long sentences, difficult words. And so people who should read the science, because it may concern them, for example, if it's about patients, people with chronic pain, for example, there's a lot of new research coming out, but they don't really know about it if we don't tell them in a more, you know, accessible way. And maybe if the stories could get people interested in the research, and then maybe they do have a look at the paper and just browse through the abstract and read my paragraph about what the study is about and kind of understand better how science is being done. That would be really cool. That is kind of the very lofty goal of this.
What I find really difficult is how to combine the science with a story. So when I read papers or when I'm involved in research myself, the results are always quite specific. The methods were really important. It's really important to consider everything that has happened, to interpret the result you got, and to kind of get whatever you find into words or your discussion part. And I just really can't wrap my head around of how to get this really specific part into a story that is then still accurate enough and fun to read and still is related to that. I mean, it should be related to it, because science is always to some regard grounded in the real world, but just how to get it back from this really specific point to a more general story.
Yeah, I think that's the difficulty when writing fictional stories. But that's also why I don't limit the creative freedom, because some people may have a very specific idea how they can explain their scientific results exactly in a story. Others may just have the general topic in mind and just want to write like a little entry passage into the study, right? Without actually talking about the research or the results. So I think we have to actually step away from the research and just really take a very big step away and be a bit more creative, branch out, and then at the end find your way back So I think that's also kind of a process of creative writing, is to just see where it takes you, right? See where it goes. And I don't think the stories need to be scientifically 100% accurate. I think that's very important. That is the point of storytelling, to make you envision different things, even if they're not realistic at all. They make you dive in and really, you know, connect with the characters and with the story. And if you explain it at the end, how it is connected to the real research and the study or the result, then I think you can do whatever you want in the story. You can really be as creative as you want. And some people on the blog actually write more realistic. So not nonfiction, but just, you know, everyday life, people going through different things. But some people also write fantasy and science fiction and robots and, I don't know, many dragons. I haven't had dragons, actually, but I'd love to have some. And of course, we know that no dragon has appeared in like a scientific research study. But I think, you know, making that clear and also leaving the story as a creative piece on its own and using it to just nudge people into the direction of the real science, that is already, if that is achieved, then I'm already happy.
I feel like being like working in science myself and being a scientist, you get trimmed so hard to just tell the mere facts and the truth.
Yeah.
Just the statistics. That's the most important part, the outcome. That sometimes I feel like it's hard to remove yourself a little bit and reframe, or like even for myself, like I read so many papers which are so focused on like looking at very specific things.
Yeah.
And being like, yeah, just telling the facts, basically, or trying to tell the facts as far as we know. So I feel like that might be part of the difficulty, because I'm currently trying to imagine writing a story myself, and I'm having a very hard time trying to do that.
You don't know before trying. And actually, all the authors I've had are like, I don't even know. I was like very, you know, I had no idea whether this was going to work. And they were all very surprised in the end, how once they started to just put down some ideas, how it flowed, basically.
Nice. Maybe I should try at some point.
Is there any kind of experience or any place where you feel like that helped people most to just start writing a creative story from science?
Yeah, it's a very good question. What I usually try to do in my workshops when I try to prompt people who have never written before is to give some prompts or some ideas. Like I said some of these, like write from the perspective of your pet, or what if the experiment fails completely? How would your experiment or your results look in an apocalyptic future? You know, like very random things to just get people's creativity flowing. And I've also had it that people use AI to get some ideas in the beginning. So they can use ChatGPT or other AIs to say, hey, this is my paper. What could be a cool, like, creative story? And then they use that as a start. And that's completely fine, I think. Actually, because I've recently come across it, I've now also included in the submission form a question on that, whether people used AI, because I guess it would be good to mention it in the stories. And then I think once the first few words are down, it gets easier over time. And that's also something I've noticed. I started writing stories before the project just for story writing. So without connecting it to science, I just liked creative writing. And then I realized that I started writing the stories that kind of had to do with my research topic. Like I was talking a lot about pain and empathy and expectations and all of that stuff that we discussed in the previous episode together. At some point I had this idea, what if I connected the two with each other? And I mean, what I usually try to tell people who want to participate in the project is say, take a study or an effect or a topic that you want to write about, and then use that as a basis. But actually, in my my own experience. Sometimes it's the other way around. I have a lot of crazy dreams that I turn into stories, and then I have story ideas first. And then I sometimes have the story already, and then I rewrite it a little bit to match the paper that I want to explain, for example. So usually you would, you know, you would start with the research you want to explain and then write the story directly on it. But it also works the other way around.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I'm right now just thinking about how I would write about my last project from the view of my cat.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I've recently, it's not on the blog yet, but I've written a bit of a story where a researcher or PhD student trades place with their animal that they're doing experiments on. And they basically see it, then they can switch back and forth and kind of explore the other perspectives. So that would kind of be an example of like, take the perspective of your research subject or participant. But also it could be like your supervisor's perspective or your friend's perspective, you telling them about it, or just a person experiencing the topic of your research in real life. For example, I do a lot with empathy and people empathizing with the pain of others. So some of my stories have situations where a person walks on the street and they see something happening, a person having an accident or something, and then what happens in their heads when they observe that, right? So that is kind of very loosely connected to my research. It's not about an exact result, but it's about the topic of feeling what other people feel. And that is already a great introduction. It doesn't have to be super specific related to like that study or that research.
What is something interesting you've learned during science communication? It can be like related to the science communication, to the medium, to the writing, but it can also be related to like some content you've come across from somebody else or something, yeah, recent.
I was thinking about what you said before, that we're often so deep into the technical details that it's very hard to step back. And that is actually, I think, the hardest lesson I had to learn in science communication, to get away from all the methodological details. And nobody's interested if my task had 50 trials, 10 per condition, I don't know, something like that. Nobody cares. What they care about is, what does it mean? What happened? Like, briefly, what happened? Of course, you have to describe some methods, but what was the result and what does it mean now? So to take this big step back and look at the big picture. And this is a shout out to my PhD supervisor, Klaus Lamm, who's always encouraged me very much, even before I was doing science communication, to do exactly that. And I think even if people are not big science communicators, that is something we all have to learn, because at some point we're going to talk to journalists, we're going to look at a press release, we're going to come in contact with science communication in some form. So we have to have some, let's say, basic ability how to talk about our work.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think it's also not, I mean, if we cannot explain the work to other people, generally speaking, I feel like it's also kind of difficult, because what do you do science for if nobody can even understand what's going on apart from like a handful of researchers around the world?
Yeah, and even within science, like I've been very, I've always, and maybe I'll do that in one of my next, you know, conference presentations, start not with the typical like introduction where you cite some papers, you say the research, why is it important, but you start with a story. And I bet you many more people will, you know, tune in and maybe keep listening instead of checking on their phone and checking when the next coffee break is, you know. I think storytelling has a place not only in science communication, but everywhere, because everybody is fascinated by stories that they can relate to their own lives.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Do you have any other formats or science communicators or something you can recommend?
Well, if I think about my own research topic, which is placebo and nocebo effects and expectations, we do a lot of science communication at our collaborative research center. It's called Treatment Expectation, and we have also a website, treatment-expectation.de. where we do lots of science communication for patients and healthcare professionals, because we want to make expectation effects more prominent. We want to inform people about what they are and improve well-being of everybody, the patients as well as the people they communicate with, the doctors and the nurses and the physiotherapists and so on. So that is very cool. We're very widely spread. We have a YouTube channel, you know, we're on many social media accounts. So I think that's a nice place to have a look if you're interested in that topic. But apart from that, I really, really enjoy science communication by Mighty Nguyen Kim. She's a very famous science communicator and I love watching her show. I think it's really cool. And she always tackles very interesting and broadly relevant topics to everyone. And my boss was even on her TV show a while ago talking about placebo effects.
That's really cool. We will link everything in the show notes. Perfect. For everybody who's now interested, can you tell us some more where to find you, how to contribute, and how to know
more? Yeah, sure. So everybody who's interested but has no idea how to start, I would say just contact me. We can have a chat. We can talk about it. We can even brainstorm some story ideas for your specific research. Like, I'm also happy to support the process. If you already have something in mind, I would suggest to head over to my website, scienceandfiction.net, where you can read about how to contribute. There are some submission guidelines. And you can always check with me in between. You can send me story excerpts or even the story before you submit it if you're not sure. Or if you have a finished story, there's also a form for that. You can just submit it immediately and then I'll get back to you. And we can communicate back and forth when it could be published, when there's a free slot. Or you can even reserve a month a bit in advance and then basically have a deadline for those people who that works better. Yeah, so I think there's many ways to engage. And of course, I would love it if you just follow along and read some of the stories that have already been published. I think there's already nearly 34. The 34th will be published this month. So there's a lot of genres and topics to explore. Just to name a few, there's even one horror story, which is very real, if you're up for that. But I have a lot of science fiction. I also have a lot regarding family or young people, and emotions is a very big topic that comes in almost all of the stories. And there's also a lot of stuff about neurodiversity and psychiatric conditions.
Very cool. Then thank you so much for talking to us again. As Helena mentioned, and as Elisa mentioned, there's another episode with Helena where she talks about pain, empathy, and placebo. We will also link this below. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'm looking forward to a lot of story submissions.
This was Kaleido Science. We hope that you enjoyed this episode and we would love to have your feedback. You can rate our podcast and give us feedback on our Instagram account. Have a great week, and you'll hear from us again in 2 weeks. This episode was hosted by Sophie Kühne and Elisa Palme. Produced by Imogen Hüsing, Clara Kühne, Sophie Kühne, Sönke Löw and Elisa Palme. The music is from Jan-Luca Schröder and the logo is from Annika Richter.